Hello and welcome. Today we're tackling a deceptively simple question that can make or break a species. When you read a species profile, how do you know whether to launch straight into emergency recovery or hit pause and fund targeted research first? After 6 months, stress testing 3 trigger frameworks across 18 Australian species profiles, from Banksia woodlands under Phytophthora pressure to koala strongholds fraying at the edges, one pattern stood out. Good profiles still fail when triggers are vague, late, or misaligned with how money and laws actually work. So let's cut through the noise and focus on what gets action moving at the right time for the right reasons. Here's the setup. We compared 3 approaches used in Australia and internationally. 1. Criteria-based triggers, the legal backbone. Think EPBC Act and IUCN thresholds for decline, threats, and regulation gaps. 2. Quantitative risk triage dashboards, early warning scorecards, combining exposure, sensitivity, adaptive capacity, and sentinel indicators like occupancy drops or disease spread. 3. Structured decision-making with pre-committed triggers. Agree in advance that if X happens, 2 failed breeding seasons, say, you implement a specific, costed, permitted action set. We ran each through the same grinder. Atlas of Living Australia records, acoustic and camera detections, eDNA, vegetation condition maps. And 2019-20 bushfire layers. We simulated budgets, tested time from profile to decision, and checked alignment with EPBC workflows and state programs. Southeast Australia and Tasmania were overrepresented, and some disease metrics leaned on literature ranges. But the patterns were clear. Accuracy first, catch real collapses without false alarms. Legal criteria are great at confirming a crisis. Hit an IUCN-style threshold. Say a 30% decline over 10 years or 3 generations, and that's solid. But fast onset threats can outrun listings. Criteria say, yes, this is bad, but they're not the early smoke alarm. Risk triage dashboards are that smoke alarm. Sentinel metrics, over 30% occupancy drop in 2 years, fires across 60% of a species range, early reproductive failure, flag trouble well before formal listing shift. You'll get more false positives. But when time is critical, that's a fair trade to catch real slides early. Structured decision-making sits in the sweet spot. By pre-committing to act when specific signals occur, you cut hindsight bias. You're not arguing about significance in the moment. You already defined it. The art is setting triggers that ignore normal variability, but still move fast when the signal is real. Speed next. How fast can you get from profile to boots on the ground? Legal criteria are thorough and defensible. Important in courtrooms and policy, but slow. Conservation advice can nudge earlier action, yet formal escalation and funding often lag behind pathogens or post-fire habitat collapse. Risk triage is built for speed. With decent monitoring, a dashboard can be decision-ready in a single season. In our trials, that meant 30 to 60% faster activation than waiting for statutory reclassification. Often the difference between containing a problem and chasing it. Structured decision-making can be just as fast, but only if your plan is pre-approved. If your profile literally says, if recruitment fails 2 years in a row, then augment habitat and initiate captive insurance, you can queue permits and procurement in advance. That saves weeks, sometimes months. Data demands. Criteria-based triggers lean on multi-year trends or strong inference. Great for well-studied species like koalas or greater gliders. Less so for cryptic invertebrates or short-lived flora. Risk triage works with relative metrics and proxies, combining floristic condition, Phytophthora presence, and fire intervals flagged Banksia risk effectively without a full census. Structured decision-making needs upfront co-design, especially with traditional owners and landholders. But ongoing monitoring can be lean and locally tailored. Crucially, everyone knows what the signals mean. Money and law. Legal criteria align beautifully with EPBC listings and unlock large funding lines and regulatory levers, halting clearing, conditioning approvals. But rigor makes them slow, and sometimes outpaced by emerging threats. Risk triage aligns with NGO and state rapid response funds and grants, wanting near-term results. The catch is authority. A dashboard alone has no statutory force, so pair it with an approved plan or a willing manager. Structured decision-making bridges the gap. Put pre-committed triggers into conservation advice or recovery plans, and early signals convert to authorized action. Procurement, permits, roles, budgets, pre-written. Auditors like it because decisions are transparent and repeatable. Cost-effectiveness. Criteria approaches can be cheap if data exist, but listing and relisting are transaction-heavy, and you may pay later for being slow. Risk triage has moderate monitoring costs, prevents major losses by catching problems early, and tolerates some wasted effort on false positives. Structured decision-making has the highest upfront design cost. Then the best return per dollar because each trigger is paired with the cheapest action that still meets the objective, designed for least regret. Equity and indigenous knowledge. Legal criteria make space for consultation, but are mostly technical. Risk triage can include local indicators, but often defaults to technocratic inputs. Structured decision-making builds indigenous knowledge into objectives and thresholds, seasonality, culturally significant sites. Locally meaningful signals. Co-design isn't just respectful. It makes triggers more accurate and legitimate. How does this look in practice? Koalas. Legal criteria confirm declines and unlock protections. A risk dashboard spots a 30% occupancy drop over 2 years in a stronghold and flags rising dog attacks. A structured plan says, if hospital admissions exceed a set threshold for two consecutive quarters and clearing exceeds a local cap, deploy targeted dog control. Heat refuges and shelter belt plantings immediately while listing processes continue. Banksia woodlands with Phytophthora. A dashboard might trigger targeted research first. Map infection fronts, test hygiene compliance, estimate spread. A pre-committed rule could say, if infection appears within 500 meters of a high-value patch, close tracks and start phosphite treatment within 2 weeks. No debate. Maugean skate, a dissolved oxygen trigger, fits SDM. If bottom DO falls below a threshold in two consecutive summers, begin emergency aeration and captive insurance now. You don't wait for a listing upgrade. The water meter is telling you. So, when should a species profile trigger research, and when should it trigger recovery? Choose targeted research when uncertainty is high, the system is still flexible, and the reversal window isn't closing fast. Noisy detections, unknown disease transmission, ambiguous habitat trends. Set an amber trigger that unlocks a focused 3 to 6 month research block with preset go, no-go thresholds and budget. At the end, the profile specifies what tips you into action. Initiate recovery when red indicators show high risk and time sensitivity. Are not above 1 for a spreading disease, 2 failed breeding seasons, fires over 60% of range, or a 30% occupancy drop across most monitored sites. Start agreed actions. Predator control, habitat closures, captive insurance, supplementary feeding, while research runs in parallel to refine the response. If you need legal levers to stop harm, like halting clearing or regulating a fishery, pursue criteria-based listing immediately, but don't wait to act. Run a risk dashboard alongside and use pre-committed rules to bridge the gap. Expect funding delays? Build SDM triggers to unlock contingency funds so procurement and permits aren't the bottleneck. If you're updating a profile now, here's a trigger-ready checklist. Define signals to track. Occupancy trends, recruitment, fledging rates, disease transmission, habitat loss, condition scores, dissolved oxygen, etc. Set explicit green, amber, and red thresholds matched to generation time and threat dynamics. Amber triggers research, red triggers recovery. Pair each threshold with a specific action, cost, responsible team, and timeline. Pre-arrange permits and procurement to meet your own deadlines. Decide monitoring cadence and the data pipeline. Who collects, who validates, when the dashboard updates. Add off-ramps, conditions to stand down. Document uncertainties and how traditional owners' knowledge informs signals and thresholds. Pitfalls to avoid. Don't write fuzzy triggers like significant decline. Put numbers on them. Don't pick metrics you can't measure. Use proxies if needed. Don't ignore funding latency. Assume weeks to mobilize unless pre-authorized. Don't design in a legal vacuum. Align with EPBC and state processes so actions are defensible. Don't delay engagement with landholders and traditional owners. Co-design makes the system faster and fairer. Where do I land? There's no single perfect framework. Use legal criteria for gravity and lasting protections. Use risk triage for speed and early warnings. Use structured decision-making to convert signals into pre-approved, costed, culturally informed actions. In plain terms, amber means research with a timer and a decision date. Red means recovery now, and your profile should map the handoff so money and law move with you, not behind you. If you only do one thing this month, pull a species profile off the shelf and reduce its triggers to one page. Three or four signals, explicit thresholds, pre-committed actions, costs, contacts, and permits. If a new ranger can pick up that page and know exactly what to do when the dial flips from amber to red, you've turned a document into a decision. Thanks for listening and for everything you do to keep species and places alive when the clock is ticking.